And the time is 11:02 a.m. This is the public rulemaking hearing for the updated rule, Washington Administrative Code, or WAC 458-20-19402, titled Single Factor Receipts Apportionment Generally. This public hearing is being recorded. My name is Adam Becker, and I'm a tax policy specialist with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division of the Department of Revenue. I'm the facilitator for this hearing. Also in attendance from the Department of Revenue are Atif Aziz in his role as the department's rules coordinator, Tina Poli, appeals review manager with ARHD, Patrick Murphy, tax policy specialist with ITA, Kathy Holder, ITA's management analyst who is monitoring our recording equipment. And for others in the department in attendance, could you please introduce yourself?
Debbie Kotecki with the audit division, and I'm a revenue auditor for specialist.
Thank you.
Stacey Alseth with the audit division.
Thank you, Stacey.
I'm Gil Brewer, Senior Assistant Director for Revenue.
Thank you, Gil.
Tim Jenrich, Assistant Director of the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division.
Thank you, Tim. I believe that is everybody. We are conducting this hearing through Microsoft Teams and would like to thank you for taking the time to attend this hearing and provide feedback. Please note that we are best able to consider your comments if you provide them to us in writing, which can be sent to me at adamb@dor.wa.gov. For purposes of the record, at this time, we would appreciate it if attendees would identify themselves, who they are representing, and whether they will be testifying during today's hearing. I will call off the names of individuals which the department is aware are in attendance. If you hear your name, please identify who you are representing and whether you will be testifying. And apologies if I get wrong anybody's name. Bailey Zhang.
I am just listening to the hearing, taking notes.
All right, thank you. Bob Heller.
Yes, hello, this is Bob. I am representing Clark Neuber.
Thank you, Bob. Bryce Alves.
Hi, my name is Bryce, and I'll be also from the Clark Neuber.
Thank you, Bryce. Caleb Allen.
Yep, Caleb Allen, KOM Consulting.
Thank you. Cynthia Howard.
Ports America, and I will just be listening in.
All right, thank you. Darcy Koiker.
Hi, Darcy Koiker, representing Ernst & Young. I do have comments to make today.
Thank you, Darcy. Emily Shea.
Hi, Emily Shea with the Association of Washington Business. I will not be making any public comments today.
Thank you, Emily. Eric Nix.
Hi, I'm with Clark Neuber. I don't have any comments today.
Thank you, Eric. Fred Hall.
Hi, this is Fred Hall with City of Renton, and I will not be having any comments.
Thank you, Fred. Garmin Newsom.
Good morning, City of Burien, no comments.
Thank you, Garmin. Jamie Ritter.
Hey there, Moss Adams, no comments today.
Thank you, Jamie. Joe Haberzettel.
Yes, I'm with Clark Neuber. No comments planned.
Thank you, Joe. Josh Stein. Josh, you may be on mute if you're responding. All right, we will move on. Daniel Kittle.
Yes, Dan Kittle with Lane Powell. I do not intend to make any comments today. I might do so, but our firm will likely submit written comments. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Dan. Christopher Koester.
Hi, Chris Kester on behalf of Pillsbury Winthrop will not be commenting.
Thank you, Chris. Deborah Katecki. I apologize. I believe you announced yourself already. I have a Liz, no last name.
Hi, I'm just listening, just taking notes.
Could you state your last name for the record?
Yes, Liz Gonzalez.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
Mark Hugh.
This is Mark Hugh. I'm representing myself. I will not be making any comments today.
Thank you, Mark. Mary Jo Zulsdorf.
Good morning. I'm representing Clark Neuber, and I don't have any comments.
Thank you, Mary. Megan Cheyenne.
Hi, this is Megan Chan with Ernst & Young. I will not be making any comments today.
Thank you, Megan. Rachel Robertson.
Rachel Robertson, Sweeney Conrad. No comments today.
Thanks, Rachel. Shannon Hamilton.
Hi, I'm Shannon Hamilton. I'm with Clark Neuber, and I will not be making any comments today.
Thank you, Shannon. Sonia Barker.
Sonia Barker with Perkins & Company. No comments today.
All right. Thank you. If you did not hear your name, could you please either raise your hand or introduce yourself?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Julie Grubbs. I'm with Goosefoot Community Fund.
Thank you, Julie.
And Julie, do you have any comments that you'll make at the hearing or not have any comments?
No, I won't have any comments.
Jennifer?
This is Michelle Basler.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Michelle.
Yep, Michelle Basler with KPMG, no comments today.
Thanks, Michelle. Jennifer?
Jennifer Simmons, revenue auditor with the Department of Revenue.
Thank you. I see no additional hands raised. Last call for those that did not hear their name but are in attendance. All right. The legal authority for this hearing is from Chapter 3405 RCW, the Administrative Procedures Act. This hearing was announced through publication in the Washington State Register as WSR 2210086 on May 3rd, 2023, and by notification to interested persons, The purpose of this hearing is to solicit comments from the public prior to taking action to amend WAC 458-20-19402, referred to in this hearing as Rule 19402. Electronic copies of this rule are available on the department's website if you did not receive a copy. Please email me at adamb@dor.wa.gov if you would like to receive a copy of the proposed rule. We will consider any comments received pertaining to the possible adoption of Rule 19402. We appreciate receiving written comments and will consider and evaluate any comments received related to the language in Rule 19402 as we proceed with the rulemaking process. You may send written comments to my attention no later than Friday, June 9th, 2023. In this manner, the Department of Revenue can fully consider your comments before proceeding with future rulemaking activities. Now, let me briefly outline the rulemaking process and where we are in respect to this rule. The first step in the process is to file a notice with the Office of the Code Revisor to announce a public meeting for solicitation of comments regarding possible adoption of the new rule. The notice, called a Form CR-101, is published in the State Register and announced through mailings to interested persons. Two public meetings were held for this rule, the first on September 11, 2017, and the second on January 19, 2022. The next step is to file a notice of proposed rulemaking with the Office of the Code Revisor to announce a public hearing on the proposed rule. This notice is called a Form CR-102 and was also published in the State Register and announced through mailings to interested persons. The purpose of the hearing is to receive further public comments regarding the proposed adoption of the new rule. All public comments will be fully evaluated as we proceed in the rulemaking process. Any comments received will be included in the permanent rulemaking file kept by the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division. The public hearing for this rule is being held today. The final step is to adopt the proposed rule. This is not a public process, but simply requires that we submit the final draft of the rule to the Office of the Code Revisor with the appropriate forms. The adopted rule would be published in the Washington State Register. Before opening the hearing for comments, I will briefly outline and discuss a summary of the context surrounding this rulemaking activity, the department's reasons for proposing amendments to the rule, and an overview of the key points in the proposed amendments. Since last amending Rule 19402 in 2015, the department has continued to receive public comments requesting additional guidance on Part 3, how to attribute receipts. Most comments were in regard to Subsection 303C on services relating to customers' business activities. For instance, stakeholders requested clarification on when receipts should be attributed to a business customer's market versus another location under Subsection 303C. Additionally, both stakeholders and the department had difficulty at times determining whether to apply Subsection 303B related to tangible personal property or Subsection 303C related to business activities. The department also received feedback relating to other provisions of the rule more generally. Following the second public meeting on January 19, 2022, a work group made up of people throughout various divisions of the department went over every single stakeholder comment received. The work group spent a significant amount of time through 2022 in meetings and many more hours reading drafts and discussing the comments and suggestions. Ultimately, the work group responded to the stakeholder comments and made changes to the draft. The proposed draft removes Section 303B. Which addressed services related to tangible personal property. This change was made in the initial proposed draft and remains in the updated draft. The department anticipates that receipts from many services related to tangible personal property will now be attributed under subsection 303C for services provided to a customer engaged in business and related to the customer's business activities. The proposed amendments to subsection 303C provide that a customer's related business activities will generally occur in the customer's market or at the customer's business location or locations. The customer's related business activities occur in the customer market if the taxpayer's service is promoting the customer's products, engaging in or completing sales of the customer's products, obtaining or facilitating payment of amounts owed to the customer from the sale of its products, which is a change since the public meeting that I will address in a moment, or establishing or maintaining the customer's market. If none of these criteria apply, then the customer's related business activities occur at the customer's business location. The framework for determining a customer's business location is similar to that for attributing receipts to a non-business customer's location under subsection 303D. Subsection 304C of the draft contains a number of amendments to existing examples, along with new examples. Finally, the proposed draft also contains more general revisions to other parts of the rule besides Part 3. Ultimately, the department believes the proposed changes will result in an application of law that is easier, consistent, and leads to repeatable results. Although we anticipate there may be some differences in results between the prior analysis and the updated analysis in limited instances, we believe there will be few differences for the most part. A summary of the key changes to Rule 19402 made following the public meeting held on January 19, 2022 are as follows. Please note, this summary does not include all updates to the draft. In addition, several changes were purely grammatical or organizational to improve clarity and will not be addressed today. So, first, under subsection 106B, the definition of apportionable income was changed from apportionable receipts less the exemptions and deductions allowable under Chapter 8204 RCW to apportionable receipts less deductions allowable under the chapter. Exemptions was removed because it is now clarified in the next subsection, 106C, that apportionable receipts does not include amounts that are exempt under chapter under the chapter 8204 RCW. Next, language was added to subsection 106E2 following feedback received from stakeholders requesting guidance on how to identify when a third-party beneficiary exists. Third-party beneficiary is a concept derived from common law, so the following language was added to indicate that we will look to Washington case law standard when identifying a third-party beneficiary. Subsection 106E2 now reads, a third-party beneficiary exists if the contracting parties intend that the taxpayer will assume a direct obligation to the intended beneficiary at the time they enter into a contract. This element of intent is met if performance under the contract would necessarily indirectly benefit the third party. Next, regarding a reasonable method of proportionally attributing, a few instances of the term distort were replaced with references to fairly attributing or something to that effect. The department believes that the concept of fairly apportioned or fairly attributed is consistent with relative case law and tax determinations in Washington. Some examples of where references to distort were replaced include subsection 106F and subsections 302C, 1, and 2. Next, although not a substantive change, the department believes it's important to note that in section 301, the numbering was revised to create consistency with changes made and to more closely match the statutory cascading steps from RCW 8204462. Section 302 is now specifically named Application of Cascading Steps. Next, in subsection 301A2, the language, if a taxpayer is unable to attribute an apportionable receipt under A1 of this subsection, was added to the beginning of the provision. This amendment clarifies that attribution must occur under subsection 301A1 if possible. Next, language previously under subsection 301 was slightly revised and moved to subsection 302A. The department believes the current draft language addressing books and records is consistent with the statutory requirement of RCW 8232070 concerning records to be reserved. The department believes the added language helps to explain how the record-keeping requirements apply in the context of apportionment. The department will note it is a fact-specific issue whether books and records contain sufficient information to determine the benefit of the service or whether a reasonable method fairly apportions where the customer received the benefit of the service. Next, subsection 302B was added with the following language. If a taxpayer is affiliated with another entity that has information indicating where the customer received the benefit of the taxpayer's service, the department will presume, unless the facts indicate otherwise, that the taxpayer is able to access that information from the affiliated entity. The department expects that, in general, affiliated entities should be in an adequate position to share information with one another that could identify where the customer receives the benefit of a service. Next, subsection 302D was added using language previously in subsection 301H, but the term apportionable activity was changed to service. This change was in response to stakeholder comments regarding confusion with the use of the term. The department intends this revision to remove a potential conflict between subsection 401 and RAFT subsection 302D. In certain cases, taxpayers will use different attribution methods for different services within the same apportionable activity or B&O tax classification. The attribution method affects what is included in the numerator of the receipts factor. However, taxpayers must still use a single receipts factor when calculating taxable income for that apportionable activity. Next, regarding examples under 302D, there were substantive changes made, but too many to address here. The purpose of the changes generally was to improve the guidance and enhance clarity. Next, as mentioned earlier, an additional criteria was added in subsection 303C1C, and the prior subsection C was moved to D. The added language, further describing a type of activity that results in attribution to the customer's market, is obtaining or facilitating payments of amount owed to the customer from the sale of its products. This additional market prong was based on stakeholder feedback questioning the prior enforcement of examples 14 and 15 pertaining to debt collectors. Next, under subsection 303C1D, the language, the department will consider the non-exclusive list of activities provided by WAC 458-20-193, section 102D7, was moved, and the department added, but for purposes of this consideration, will replace any references to this state or Washington with any state. The purpose of this change is to make the list of activities generic to any state, so the analysis can be universally applied as opposed to limited to Washington. Next, similar to the examples discussed above, there were substantive changes to the examples under 304C, but too many to address here. Some examples were added and some were changed to improve the guidance or enhance clarity. Additionally, references to numbered examples throughout the rule were revised to accurately reflect the changes made. Finally, under section 602, the language shown on the reconciliation was added in a couple instances in the last sentence. This change is being made to clarify how the imposition of penalties relates to the annual reconciliation of apportionable income. We will now proceed to the public comment portion of this hearing. If you have a comment, please identify yourself for the record and any organization that you are representing. We also appreciate receiving written testimony. Again, if you have written testimony, you can email it to me at adamb@dor.wa.gov so that it can be a part of the permanent rulemaking file. Does anyone have a comment they would like to make about the proposed rule draft as written?
And before we get started, I think while Adam was speaking, we may have had one additional stakeholder join us after the roll call. Riza Montes, if you could identify yourself, if you're representing an organization and whether you'll be commenting today.
Oh, thank you. Riza Montes of Vanis Feldman. No, I won't be making comments today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, if you have a comment, could you please raise your hand? Bob Heller.
Thank you, Adam. Again, I'm Bob Heller, and I represent Clark Duber. I've just got a couple of comments here. I noted that, as you mentioned in describing the proposed changes, that you've removed from the rule draft any reference to the concept of distortion. I know that the intent statement from the underlying legislation represents a legislative goal that Washington get its fair share from income attributable to activities conducted in the state. But I think that the concept of fairness, while laudable, is a very squishy standard. It's quite subjective. It's not particularly helpful to taxpayers in determining the way in which they compute the apportionment factor. And while the apportionment prong of complete auto transit does refer to fairly apportioned as one of the requirements to satisfy Commerce Clause concerns, as I read the case law interpreting that provision, they do use the concept of distortion, and distortion itself is more amenable to kind of maybe more of an analytical or mathematical or objective measure. I don't think the term distortion in and of itself is necessarily particularly helpful. So I would request that the department consider restoring the concept of distortion or retaining it in the rule, but providing, you know, some descriptions of what the department would consider to be distortive. You know, whether it's questions of a proportion in relation to the level of activities conducted in the state or some other method that makes it a more objective standard, I think would be helpful. I think moving in a fairness sort of ideas is moving in the wrong direction and just makes the standard more opaque and difficult to apply. The other comment that I have had to do with an addition to the provisions in, I believe, dealing with third-party beneficiaries and talking about the absence of a contract, and it says that the department will proceed in a manner that it deems best. It seems to me that the department, I would hope, always always proceeds in a manner it deems best. That's not a particularly meaningful statement or helpful to the application of the rule. It seems to me if the department is going to put any language in there about how it would proceed, is that it contain, you know, some indication that it would be commercially reasonable, you know, some sort of an objective standard rather than just sort of the subjective, you know, desires of the department. You know, sort of recognizing the department as the administrator of the Revenue Act, you know, hopefully always acts in a manner which it deems best. The question is whether or not, you know, it's within the scope of its authority, and the rules should really speak to that. And then let's see. Oh, the addition of this idea of a principal place of business or corporate domicile. They could be the same or they could be different. And it just seems to me that maybe it's a little bit more discussion of what the department means when it says principal place of business, or this concept of corporate domicile, I think would be helpful. And perhaps, you know, they should say that principal place of business, or when that's not obvious, maybe corporate domicile. Corporate domicile, I think, as the term is used, is legal domicile, although that's not clear. If they mean commercial domicile, again, then there's this kind of overlap between principal place of business and commercial domicile. So it just seems to me that there needs to be a little bit more clarity around the use of those terms. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you very much, Paul. We will respond to all comments received in writing. Darcy, I see that your hand is now raised.
Hello, thank you, Adam. I agree with Bob's comments. And Section 101 in the draft rule, there is a phrase, performed within Washington. I think that this phrase, performed within Washington, could be misleading to someone who isn't quite understanding that the activities need not necessarily be physically performed within Washington for the revenue to be a portion to Washington. So I'd urge you to reconsider that phrasing so as not to confuse somebody. Another comment, Section 106E contains the definition of customer. But this definition is not the same as the definition in the statute 8204-462-3B8. I would urge the department to use what the legislature provided as the definition of customer and not exceed that definition. And then another comment relates to the books and records provisions, specifically where the draft rule discusses how the taxpayer may be able to obtain books and records or documents from its affiliated entities. And I want to point out that the statute regarding books and records, RCW 8232070, says the taxpayer's records, not the taxpayer's affiliate's records. So I think that it's too much of a stretch for the Department of Revenue to require a taxpayer with affiliated entities to go obtain records from its affiliates for purposes of determining apportionment, because the statute regarding books and records just relates to the taxpayer's records, not somebody else's records. And I also, for that reason, I think that examples 20 and 45, requiring obtaining records from other parties, is not appropriate. And also one final comment regarding example 21, regarding the investment manager, where there's a statement that the Department of Revenue believes that the investment manager should know the location of the investors. I want to say that that's not always the case, and that's a bad presumption there, that the investment manager looks through the fund to the investment manager location or the investor locations, because the investment managers often do not know where the investors are located. That's all for now.
All right. Thank you, Darcy. I do not see any other hands raised, but does anyone else have comments they would like to make? There we go. Daniel?
Yes, thank you, Adam and Patrick. Just one comment, again, Dan Kittle with Lane Powell. One comment on the third-party beneficiary standard, and I appreciate your clarification in your statement here today that this was intended to look to Washington case law standards to identify a third-party beneficiary. I would just note that it does not appear that that concept is expressly incorporated. Notice that you did incorporate the language from prevailing Washington cases regarding third-party beneficiaries and when that applies, but there may be value in adding an express statement in there indicating something along the lines of the department should take into account the applicability of third-party beneficiary common law standards by Washington courts in determining when and where a third-party beneficiary relationship exists. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Is there anyone else that would like to make a comment? All right. Seeing no hands raised.
And also a thank you to those who commented, and also just a reminder that if you could, if you wouldn't mind following up with Adam via email, if possible in writing, just to summarize your comment. I think that would make it, it would help to ensure that we correctly understand what your comments or concerns are and help us in responding to them in writing.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. So thank you for participating. The time is 11:37 a.m. and the public hearing for Rule 19402 is now adjourned.